Families willing to fight for each other. Families willing to die for each other. Let's go, AU!
War Eagle, this is War Bloggle with the War Bloggle Podcast, episode 18. We're 2 weeks into the year. It's, as I'm recording this, it's January 9th. So this is the second Thursday. I said in my New Year's resolutions I was going to podcast once a week, release them every Friday. So we're two for two. Everybody says the second Friday after the New Year is when everybody quits their New Year's resolutions, which is true. They probably go out and eat on the weekends and stuff like that after a full week into the year. Not doing it. You direct message me and cuss me out if I skip a week. Just, I give you permission to do that. As always, and I say always, 2 years and 2 weeks into the year, this is obviously audio if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Music, Apple Podcasts. Google Podcasts went away, apparently. Amazon, whatever, wherever you listen to your podcast, this is obviously audio. But if you go over to YouTube, I will have some visual aids in video form, sort of slides and whatever I'm talking about. I'll describe it if you're listening only. But anyway, there you can listen and watch on YouTube as well. But let's get into it. Auburn beat Texas Tuesday this week. It was a 87-82. Obviously, kind of a tight ending. Auburn led by 21, I believe, at one point. They kind of led anywhere between 13 and 16 for most of the second half. Auburn kind of has this thing where, you know, they'll go into each half up 10 or more, it seems like. And then probably the first 3 or 4 minutes of the second half, we'll hit a bunch of threes or do some crazy stuff and get up 17-18, and you feel like the game's over. Well, that's exactly what happened this time. I think Miles Kelly hit a three, and it got it up to like 16-17-18, and then it was like, five minutes in, I'm like, okay, shouldn't the game be over? I mean, it's like, we've already been sitting here all day waiting for the game. First half was back and forth. I mean, Auburn led most of the game, 8-10 points, that kind of thing. But it was like, I looked down and it was 15 minutes left. And I was like, we got to keep this lead up this long. And that's hard to do. Auburn against Missouri and against Texas now have had 20-plus point leads. And then they get a little quote-unquote hairy. Texas got a little bit more hairy than Missouri, where we start getting worried when the lead is 10. Because it was 20. Keep in mind, it's a big deal to take it from 20 to 10. You got to do it twice to get it down to zero. Obviously, that lead got down to three at one point for Auburn. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Those are things Auburn's got to kind of learn, and I'll kind of go over that in a minute. But, if you're on the road in the SEC, every SEC team is pretty good. LSU doesn't seem to be great. South Carolina doesn't seem to be great, but everybody else is, I mean, they're still good. And if you go on the road there, it's going to be tough to play. Auburn's got to play at South Carolina this weekend. But if you go on the road and you've got a low number by your name, a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that Auburn's had for the last few weeks, and you're getting destroyed and nothing seems to be working, and then in the last few minutes, all of a sudden, oh, the lead's 8, 7, 6, you're going to get pumped. The home crowd's going to get in it. They're playing with house money. They've already thought they lost, so it's kind of like they've had a loss in their brain for the last 30 minutes. But then they see that going away, and it's like, oh, we're kind of coming back. But if we lose, okay, I'd already accepted a loss. But if we win, you know, great comeback, whatever. And just the law of basketball. There's a bunch of laws of basketball. One law of basketball is if a ref misses a blatant foul, and the ball goes to the team that should have been called for the foul, they're going to make a three-pointer immediately. It's going to make it even worse. You're going to sit there and be booing the ref, and then here comes a three-pointer, a dagger. It's going to happen. That's a law of basketball. Another law of basketball is if you are the losing team and you should definitely lose the game and you've been losing the whole game, if there is one iota of hope, if there is one tiny little a mouse could squeeze through the door type thing, you're going to start making shots you hadn't made all game. You could throw the ball backwards and it's going to go in the basket. So that's what happened. There was, you know, not that this is a thing, but Baker Mazzara missed his 52nd free throw in a row or something like that. And just a few other little things. And it turned into, okay, Texas hit a three. Oh, here's an and one. Oh, here's whatever. And it's, if you give them any sort of hope in any sport, but especially in a road college basketball game against a team that you know you should beat and you've been beating the whole game, it's going to happen. And Auburn kind of let it happen. But again, they're good enough to close that out. You know, we act like the number one team in every sport should always win by 30. And on the road in basketball, especially in the SEC, like, that, it's not going to happen. You're going to win by one. You're going to lose. Auburn's going to lose some games. Sorry, it's going to happen. It's just how it is. But Auburn is at that level now where everybody is saying they are one of the favorites to win the national championship, which is absolutely crazy to hear and say. So they're going to get the most scrutiny, and it's dumb because we're nitpicking every little thing. Because now we got to think, oh well, Duke is this, and Tennessee's this, and they didn't do this. Tennessee won by this much, and you know those are things I've done in the past for sure. I'll still do it now. There's things Auburn has to fix. They don't have many major negatives, but the negative they have to me is when we get a massive lead, we kind of turn into fun ball. We don't pass the ball as much, or if we do, it's very reckless, and it gives those teams over you know, a five, six, 7 minute span, it gives them a chance to chip away. And then, oh, you look up and it's a 6-point lead with 2 minutes left. And what'd you do? You gave the home team hope. Auburn is good enough to destroy a team by halftime. But in a league like the SEC, you've got to continue to destroy. And that's hard to say to a 18, 23-year-old, especially somebody who's been told, being told they're the best in the league. And so I'll move on to that right now. Jani Broom is, I saw a video this morning, another video. I keep feeling like as the season goes on, you know, when Auburn starts to look a little more human and Jani maybe has a bad game here or there just because, I feel like it's going to start dropping down. You know, I'll get into KenPom in a second, but I feel like it's going to, eventually things are going to look a little bit more human. Now, I say that, but Auburn's already played 8 quad one games. They've proven it more than anybody by far. There's, I think, Oregon and somebody else had 5 quad one games. We've won 7 quad one games. So it's not like it's your typical, oh, they went through a medium-sized non-conference slate and here comes SEC. Yes, it is. It's going to be somewhat of a step up. You're not playing Monmouth every third game. But Auburn's already beaten Houston, Iowa State, North Carolina, even though they've kind of dropped a little bit. Played Duke, you know, a very winnable game. They've already beaten all these teams, Memphis. They've already done more than what most teams will do all year, even through their conference slate. But I keep kind of still feeling like, all right, we still got, what, 17 more games? There's going to be a lot of chances for people to be like, yeah, Auburn's kind of looking a little bit more human, a little bit more pedestrian, but it really hasn't gone away yet. Because I saw a guy this morning, just a national guy, say Jani Broom is unequivocally the best basketball player in the nation right now. Cooper Flag, whatever, from Duke, he looks pretty good. He dunked on that Pitt guy, so people are going to see that one clip and act like he may be the best. But again, I said this last time, Jani Broom doesn't look like he's trying hard at anything, and he's still making shots. He's still doing things that other people are not. Now, the not looking like he's trying too hard can come off as a problem sometimes. There's times where, you know, he might look like he's loafing down the field or the court, or he only wants the ball and doesn't care about anything else. That's easy to nitpick because you're staring at him the whole game because he's the best in the court. I keep saying field. I keep thinking about baseball and football. But there was a point in the Texas game, and it was part of Texas's comeback, where, you know, Jani got bumped in the face. The ref was behind Jani, so he couldn't see the play. I remember 5 minutes before, that same ref was behind an Oklahoma guy, or Texas guy, and he started to drive, and he called a foul on, I think, Miles. and there was no way he saw Miles' hand. So I don't understand how he saw didn't see this guy's hand hit Janai's face. But anyway, this was like during a tough part of the game. The lead was single digits. It'd kind of get a little hairy there, and the guy pops Janai in the face, and he turns around and looks at the ref while the shot clock's at like 5. And then he kind of acts like he's going to shoot, and he looks at the ref again, and he does that. And then he drains the shot, which was an awesome shot, like huge. Everybody's like, he just got punched in the face or hit in the face. Now he made a shot. Then he scoffs at the ref again, and kind of he just said, hits me in the face. The ref teed him up, which was the softest tee in the world. But Janai's got to understand this. I'm not downing Janai in any way at all, but not too many people get to be told that they're the best player in the sport for months. Not many people get to experience that and know how to handle it. But he's going to get the most eyes of anybody. He's going to get the most eyes of the scout from the other team, the most eyes of NBA scouts. He's going to get the most eyes from the refs because people are expecting something from him now. And so it's hard to say. It's hard to tell somebody, play the way you've played before. Nothing's changed, because it has changed, because he's got the eyes now. So I don't know. I don't care who you are. If the ref doesn't call the play, doesn't call the foul, don't sit there and stare at him while the shot clock goes down. Now, he made the shot, so it's kind of hard to fight that and argue it, but most people are not going to make that shot. That shot's not going to go down that many times. If you turn around and, I mean, it was very LeBron-ish, I'll be honest. It looked like LeBron, and I don't watch a lot of NBA, but what I see of LeBron was that. It was like, he hit me in the face. And I'm not saying it was a, do you know who I am? I'm Janai. I'm the best player. You should have called that. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have that feeling. Kind of seen that kind of sneak in just a little bit. Not a ton. But you got to, I mean, it's different. I mean, he got hit in the face. It's not like it was an arm grab or he brushed me as I went by. He got tapped in the face. The guy didn't call it. Again, it's hard to argue it. It's hard to fight it because he ended up draining the shot right at the buzzer of the thing. But it gave them 2 free points, and it gave them – they were already going to get the ball because he made the shot. But the game was over without that technical, which we can now – you could argue the ref was completely soft. That game, I've been meaning to make a video. I know, again, college referees are under a microscope. It is an extremely hard game to call. It's very fast. They're not very fast. They're having to run up and down the court. But the first part of that game, I remember yelling, there was no foul called on any of that. Like there was a drive where it was kind of a fast break their way and then a fast break our way, and people were all over the court and just flying around and just landing on people and jumping on people and not one single call. And then what happens? At 4 minutes left in the game, when the lead's 10, all of a sudden we're tapping people, we're breathing on people, and they're calling fouls. Everybody always says this, just be consistent. People yell that in baseball all the time about strike zones. If you're going to be bad, at least be bad the whole time so we know what the bad is, which I agree with. I mean, if you can go up and down the court and people are dying, I mean, in the Missouri game, 3 people got hurt just from contact, and they called no fouls. But, you know, in the Texas game, the first 95%, people are all over each other, and then all of a sudden we decide to change and call any little thing. Just be consistent. Be consistent. So, Auburn beats Texas. Oh, one other little thing about this game. Chad Baker Mazzara, he missed his, I think he would have been at 52. I think he made 51. Anyway, it's a record. But I'm kind of glad he missed it. I mean, the record means nothing. It's kind of cool. He missed it in a spot, again, that point would have helped. It was obviously something he was thinking about every single shot. We know Chad is very emotional and very showy, and it's fun most of the time. But you could tell he was definitely thinking about it. And it's better now that he kind of got it off the monkey off his back and just let it go, because we don't want it to get to a point where Auburn's up, Auburn's tied or down one and absolutely needs the shot, and all he's thinking about is, I got to make number 64 here. Because, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It just keeps building. It's almost like, you know, if it's not a big season, if we're just having a 19 and 14 season or something like that, and we're hoping to maybe get in the tournament, or it's not a national championship feeling season, maybe that's something. But when you're on the road and the lead's five and you're sitting there triple breathing and Lamaze class and then trying to just make sure the streak's going, that it can be detrimental. So I'm kind of glad he missed it. I mean, it was 1 point. Sorry, he has the record. Probably won't be broken. I don't even know who had the record before. I didn't even know it was a record until after he had missed it. But isn't it funny that also a few years ago, one of the Carlsons, Cody Parkey something, we broke the record for longest streak of point after attempts. And then like two later, we missed it. Just a random whatever. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. It's like once you break it, then you start thinking differently. I don't know. But yes, skipping over, if you're watching, we had the rankings this week. They're obviously going to be different. I'm not going to harp on Tennessee too much. They got exposed. We knew what they were. They're good, but they got absolutely destroyed at Florida. Florida's good, but got absolutely destroyed. It wasn't that was a tough place to go play. You're going to have a bad day. What'd they score? 43 points, 30? It was like 15 points at halftime. I have yet to see why people think Tennessee is unequivocally the best team in the nation. They're good. And, okay, here's why. They hadn't lost a game yet until Florida. And if that's your reasoning in college basketball, you don't need to be voting in the AP poll. Tennessee gained votes. Two people ended up not voting. If you're looking right now at the visual aid, Tennessee had 45 first place votes. Auburn had 15. The week before they had 20. The week before they had 21. We found out, I talked to the people at AP poll tracker last week, one guy who had Auburn at first did not vote. So the Auburn lost a vote just in general. This week, two people didn't vote. And they were two people that had Auburn at number two. So I don't know. Auburn lost a vote, lost multiple votes, four at least. So I don't know why we're allowing people to vote if they don't turn their stuff in. What is the point? But anyway, Tennessee, Auburn, Iowa State, Duke, Alabama is what it was, and Kentucky. Kentucky was number six. They lost to Georgia. They're obviously going to go down. Florida was number eight. They destroyed Tennessee. They're obviously going to go up. They only have one loss at Kentucky. So I wouldn't be surprised if Florida's number five-ish. I think Marquette struggled with Georgetown. They're number seven. So I wouldn't be surprised if Florida's six, whatever. Alabama's going to stay where they are. Duke is just going to tear through ACC because ACC's down. North Carolina's not great. Clemson's not great. Louisville's okay. I don't know. Iowa State is just going to hang up there. People love Iowa State. Auburn already beat them, obviously, so that's a good thing. But let's, you know, Tennessee's going to drop down. They'll probably be seven, something like that. Let's swip over to KenPom, which is kind of a funny thing. After Auburn beat Texas, Auburn gave up 55 points in the second half. So that hurt their defensive rating. I think we've got the 18th best defensive rating. And KenPom, we still got number one offense, but Duke is something like number one defense, ninth offense. So their average or whatever is better. If you look, actually, I just noticed on this screenshot. I took this screenshot Thursday morning as I'm recording this. Last night, Auburn was right below Duke. Now it looks like they're tied, 36.68. Let me look at that real quick. Let me pull KenPom up real fast. Why would Auburn be number two if they're 36.68? That's interesting. That was not the same number. And I don't know really what changed. There's all kinds of calculations on this. Anyway, I just thought it was funny that now that Tennessee lost, if Auburn wins at South Carolina on Saturday, which they just lost by 20 to Alabama, hosting Alabama, and there's tickets galore. You can go there for $15 and watch Auburn play. But I just thought that was interesting that now that Auburn is finally most likely going to move up to number one in the AP poll, I bet some idiots start voting Iowa State there because Iowa State's been number three. Now that Auburn is finally going to probably be the number one in the AP poll, they dropped to number two in the KenPom, which has been their biggest reasoning for any arguments you have about rankings. that Auburn was like so far and away at number one in this widely accepted algorithm that everybody loves to use now. They finally would get up to number one in AP poll and drop in the computer. That's just funny. But now that I'm looking at this, yes, I know 2 days ago after Auburn lost to, or Auburn beat Texas, Auburn was like 0.8 below Duke. Now they're tied. So I don't know. That's interesting. I need to tweet about it and see what happens. But I'm just looking at it real quick. Our strength of schedule is 8th. Duke's is 16. So that's the thing now. Duke is going to tear through the ACC most likely. Auburn's going to be mostly up, but possibly down here and there in the SEC on road games especially. We got to go to Kentucky. We do get to host Tennessee. I think we host Florida. So those are two biggies. Arkansas, I'm not sure. Alabama, obviously, we go back and forth. Ole Miss, we go to both. They're decent. Georgia, we go to both. They're decent. They just beat Kentucky. Weird. Georgia's also top 10 in baseball. I don't know if y'all saw that. I remember when Georgia was the worst team by far. Anyway, so just here's Ken Pom right now. I need to research why Auburn is tied with Duke and it still says number two. So that makes me realize that if Auburn doesn't give up 100 points to South Carolina, we'll probably move back up to number one and should be ranked number one on Monday, as long as we take care of South Carolina. So the other big story in basketball in this game was Bruce Pearl won his 214th game at Auburn. That's a lot, especially since he's only been there. It's just his 11th year, I think they said. So he's averaging, at this point, 21 wins. I remember the 9-win season before that and all that. But obviously that's huge. He seems like extremely humble, and people misuse the word humble a lot. But he does seem extremely humble. Like he knows what he has. Last year he was kind of this way too. He knows this is a year. Not the year, because that means it's never going to happen again. But this is a year that Auburn could win the national championship. Like, he's not negative about his team hardly at all. He doesn't really talk about the things we can work on. Obviously, there are things we can work on. Obviously, he still screams a lot. Not near as much as he used to. But you can see it in his face. If you're looking on YouTube or where, if you're watching video anywhere, you can see it in his face right there. He is. He's kind of more serious, because he knows that if he keeps his head down and we keep working the same way we've been working all season, this is going to be a big year. Not that he's ever just been like, oh, we've got 4 losses, I'm just going to be whatever now. But you can see it in his demeanor. Like, he knows, and I posted the video that Auburn posted, which is a great video, after the Texas win, they gave him a phone and let him watch this video that had all the former players from his Final Four year. And a few others, Sharif was on there, and it had, you know, Rick Pitino and, Tom Izzo and all them. He was just, you know, crying, obviously, because it was one of those things, probably most because of his players coming on there and telling him how much he meant to him. But you can just see it. It's a different, semi-different Bruce. He's older. I get it. He's a granddad now. He's done this a while. But you can see it in his face and his demeanor that he knows this is a year to win. So he's not kind of over the top, you know, whatever. And he feels more responsibility and he feels more accountability for everything. And so he doesn't want to be that wild, off-the-cuff, crazy psycho maybe he's been in the past, where he's also dealing, and I'm this is going to sound stupid, people are going to roll their eyes, as a coach, I've coached a lot of youth baseball over the last 8-9 years. Those first few years I was very on edge, because we were learning, the teams were trying to figure things out, how to run this stuff and how to do everything. And so every game I just screamed my head off. And as I've gotten older, as I've kind of figured it out a little bit more, things slow down. I barely open my mouth now. And that's what I kind of feel like Bruce was maybe in the past years, where there's frustrating things. He knows all the pressure's on him to win or at least build. And he's got Auburn where it's never been before and he wants to deliver. And so he's edgy. He's antsy. But now it's kind of like he's just sitting there letting it happen because what he's built is working this year, at least. The team he's built, I mean, you can let Janai go. I don't mean like go. I mean like put him on the court and let him go. And that saves a lot of stuff. But you can still see him on the sideline coaching. There was somebody posted, a non-Auburn guy posted a clip of, it was Dylan and I want to say Hudson was on there. And they were, Bruce was just kind of standing there coaching them up. I've noticed Bruce does a lot of just, when somebody on the court messes up, he'll go down the line and just kind of yell at them as if they did it. But he's really coaching them saying, hey, you see what he just did? Don't do that. But anyway, they were just like staring him in the eyes. And that just shows a complete trust and respect of the coach. So especially for 19, 20, 21-year-olds that think they know everything a lot of the time, watching, you know, him go down, up and down the bench and watching his players just stare him in the eyes, that kind of shows what they think of him. But anyway, so big win, big milestone, 214 wins. He's got the most. I was going to tweet this. I need to research a little bit more. He's got the most single-digit loss seasons in Auburn history by far. Y'all know Sonny Smith never lost less than 11 games. Bruce has lost like 6, 8, whatever, 4. There was one year where Cliff Ellis, I remember that year, the one seed year, 99, we were 29-4. That was a pretty good one. But Bruce has the most single-season loss records in Auburn history. It's at least 4 or 5, I think. And I don't think anybody else had more than one. So I had fun on Twitter after this, and you know, everybody's saying, build the statue. So if you're familiar with Twitter or X, I'm never going to call it X, but there's a new AI system on there called Grok. And you could just type in anything. I've just been having fun with it. So I said, show me an image of a statue of Bruce Pearl outside Neville Arena. And if you're looking at the video of this podcast, I've got one up right now. It throws 4 or 5 images out, but I tweeted it, and in true internet fashion, people acted like I was saying this is the statue or should be the statue. It was an AI generated image, and it doesn't look exactly like him. No statue has ever looked exactly like somebody, but you know, people are acting like I sculpted this and sent it to Auburn and said, here's your statue. But it does look pretty dang close. I mean, it looks like a real statue, a bronze statue outside an arena that has Neville on it. But anyway, if check that out, go to my Twitter account, or I put it on Facebook and Instagram as well. Have fun, people. We don't have to be so negative. And I mean, the next thing I talk about is even worse, but we don't have to just assume and hate and think everything you don't like for that millisecond is the worst thing in the history of the world. Somebody punched you in the face. So on that note, prior to Auburn playing Texas, I want to say maybe last Saturday, I've had this idea, and of course people had to say they had the idea first, but I just had this idea for the past few years that Auburn should play, especially now that every game is sold out or standing room only for Monmouth was $175, why not go and have one game at Beard Eves Memorial Coliseum? It holds about 1,000 more, I think 1,200 more. You could have some standing room only. You could add more seats in the base, around the baseline and all that kind of stuff, or whatever. But, you know, a December game, a November game, when you're playing Monmouth or Loyola Marymount or any of those games, go play a game over there. It doesn't have to be on TV. Maybe SEC Network Plus. It's 1,200 more seats or whatever. You know, just... you got the nostalgia reasons. You got a few more seats. But of course, people had to act like, I put this on Facebook, which Twitter's like toxic trolling, but Facebook is toxic stupidity. And, you know, people just giving me 900 reasons about how it won't work. You know, oh, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? The floor is just buckled and you couldn't stand on it. Guys, I've been in there. I was in there during football season. There are seats. There's a floor. There's a light. The floor is new and usable. You know why? Because wheelchair basketball plays in there. They're playing in it right now. If a wheel can roll on it, I'm pretty sure we can play some basketball on it. Nobody's saying, you know, let's play an entire season and invite the world. I don't care if the scoreboard doesn't work. Put a fake scoreboard up. Sound system, put a karaoke machine. Sell some popcorn in the corner, in the concourse. Number one, some of the stuff can be cleaned up. I mean, you should go to my Facebook. I mean, it is the biggest hit post I've had in years. I mean, go read them. I should have put some screenshots on here. But there was a guy who had bullet lists of why it will not work. It's honestly like people are going to die if Auburn plays a basketball game in Beard Eves Memorial Coliseum. I mean, that's where I've been. When I was in college, that's where we went. When I was little, that's where we went. When I was out of college, that's where we went to watch games. The seats are wooden. They work. Do all of them work? Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, they have a net hanging way above the court because some ceiling tiles have fallen. Guys, I didn't say let's just pop over there this afternoon and play against Arkansas. I'm saying it'd be kind of cool. Clean it up a little bit. Don't spend a ton of money. Clean it up. If there's a chair with the nail sticking straight up, take it out. Just a fun little, you could make more money on it. You could sell more tickets. And it would get, the main reason is, give 1,200 more people, 1,500 more people, maybe 2,000 more people, a chance to watch a game and have the nostalgic thing. Obviously, going and playing in it might even create more buzz than playing Monmouth in December, but in Auburn Arena. But we can have fun. We can just have an idea. We can just, you know. Sorry, I didn't switch my slide over on my video. You can look at a recent picture of it. It's got a nice floor. The scoreboard apparently doesn't work. I'm sure you could plug it in and it might work. You know, it's, again, I was saying play a December game against Monmouth and just, you know, nostalgia, add a few more seats just for one game, just because people go in there and run the stairs. There's people that have track practice in there. Again, they have wheelchair basketball in there right now, sanctioned wheelchair basketball games. That's where you go to watch those games. It could be done. I kind of want to argue to do it now just because of how dumb the people on Facebook were about it. Like, why would you want to take a game out of Auburn Arena? It's the best arena in the world. I said, if it's December and the students are gone and you're playing Monmouth, why not? Just go. I don't care if nobody's there, but just go. It'd just be cool. There's a full basketball arena right there. And it has a lot of history. And it has some more seats, and it would just be kind of cool. Sorry I had an idea. So I didn't mean to ruin anybody's day. It's like there were people that have buried bodies in the Coliseum, and they're scared that if Auburn plays a game over there, they're going to get caught. But I don't know. So anyway, Auburn plays South Carolina this Saturday. South Carolina, again, lost to Alabama by 20 at South Carolina this week. They don't appear to be great, but South Carolina is always one of those weird teams. They're like Missouri. When they're not as good as you, they like to fight. I just remember that. I can't remember that guy's name. He was big. It was back when we were kind of getting good 6-7 years ago. He was there forever. He would just bully through the lane, and nobody called anything because he was big. So I would expect a game like that with a home crowd behind it. That was a different thing about Missouri. Missouri was fighting people and slamming people and jumping on people, but they were getting booed. So the ref would kind of be on Auburn's side. But now South Carolina is going to be throwing bows in the lane, and the crowd's going to be loving it, so they're going to allow it for a little while. But if Auburn wins that game and it's not a one-point game or something like that, they should be ranked number one after that. Now, will they be KenPom number one? I don't know. But as of right now, from what I'm seeing that I showed you earlier, if you're looking at the video show you earlier, Auburn's tied at number one. I don't get it. So, anyway, got a long way to go. 17 games to go. It's going to be tough. Every road game will be tough. Alabama will be tough at home. Tennessee will be tough at home. But, anyway, real quick, now that I have KenPom up, let's look. Auburn has already played Duke. They're number one. Auburn beat number three at Houston. Auburn beat number four, Florida State, Iowa State. They play number five, Florida. They play number six, Tennessee. They play number eight, Alabama. They play number 14, Texas A&M. They play number 16, Mississippi State. Mississippi State appears to be pretty decent. They're 14-1. They're probably, I don't know, Arkansas level, probably better than Arkansas. But Auburn plays, I don't know what that was, has already played or will play seven teams in the top 20 of KenPom right now. Ole Miss could jump up there eventually. I don't know. Texas A&M, did y'all see they came back and beat Oklahoma while they were after being down 18 on the road? All right. Exciting season. So I'm done talking about sports for this moment. I've had this idea for, this was one of my New Year's resolutions for the Bloggle, one of many, is to have eventually have a podcast that is not about Auburn, that is about music, movies, weird stuff. I like music. I play the drums. I play guitar. Been in a few bands. I love music, rock music mostly, country here and there, some old school hip hop and whatever. But rock music is kind of a thing. But I've wanted to do a podcast about non-Auburn things. So I'm going to have a segment at the end of these. If it hits me that week, if I want to do it, or it's not, I haven't talked for 4 hours now. But I'm gonna do a segment about something: music, movies, wrestling, weird stuff, aliens, ghosts, all these other things that I like that interest me. And so, if you don't want to hear about that, turn it off. But this week, I'm gonna talk about Creed, the band. Yes, Creed, the band. Mainly. You know, podcasts are better when you complain about something, at least when you're talking to yourself like I am. Creed was a band that became big when I was in high school, the end of high school, the beginning of college, through college. Their first two albums, My Own Prison, Weathered, were awesome. My Own Prison was great. Weathered was great. Then they broke up, and then they came back like 10 years later with another album. I didn't really listen to it at all. I think that was right when we had kids, and I just wasn't into it anymore. They have one decent song. But now they're obviously back out on tour. They have been the last year or so, and I went and saw them in Birmingham. It was awesome. I understand every reason that people made fun of Creed when I was in high school and college. I get it. When I was at Auburn, I had a Creed shirt just – because I got it at a concert and people made fun of me like crazy. I get it. They were the Nickelback to the cool kids back then. They were just, you know, because Scott Stapp, you know, he's very demonstrative with his motions and very back then. He was very holier than thou and very cool and kind of wanted to be Jim Morrison, but whatever. Jim Morrison was a huge influence of his. He went to Florida State just like Jim Morrison, and he kind of wanted to be the Doors, but hard rock. But he's very artsy looking, but he just didn't seem that way. So again, I get why people made fun of Creed. It's mainly Scott Stapp, who had been through a lot of problems, has been through a lot of problems, but he has had a resurgence, got his life back on track. He's jacked now. The band apparently likes him again. You know, they broke up because basically they just couldn't deal with his ego and whatever before. And now they're back together. The rest of the band joined up with Miles Kennedy and they became Alter Bridge. And it was basically Creed with a different singer. The music was a little bit different. And the lead singer of Alter Bridge could play guitar as well. And so he added with that. But kind of the point I'm getting at here, on TikTok, on any social media these days, Creed, obviously they're out on tour now, so they've kind of had a resurgence. But what I'm finding is, and I'm not trying to be the old curmudgeon that y'all always say I am. I'm 42 years old. I'm seeing a lot of almost making fun of or ironic listening to of Creed by like 20 to 25-year-old bros. And the song that everybody's loving right now is One Last Breath. Hold me now, I'm 6 feet from the edge, and I'm thinking 6 feet ain't so far down. That ballad, screaming, whatever. Which, to me, I mean, that's a good song, but in Creed land, that's not a top 10 song. But if you look on Spotify, it is the number one Creed song right now. More than Higher, more than My Sacrifice, more than all the radio hits. And that was a radio hit, but it was kind of near the end, before they broke up. And that's just, you see all these dudes singing this karaoke and you know, at concerts, having these 5 or 6 25-year-old bros hugging and singing this song. And again, that's a good song, but I don't see it as being definitive Creed for me. And I almost get this sense that they're, you know, again, back then it was embarrassing. Like you were cheesy, loser, whatever. The Nickelback effect, which again, now people have started to say, oh, Nickelback's good. I don't know what you're talking about. Because back then it was cool to hate Creed, cool to hate Nickelback. But really people liked them. They liked the songs. But if you had a Creed shirt on, or if you liked whatever, ha ha, we hate, yeah, that's so cheesy, whatever. Okay, now 10 years later, all of a sudden people are they don't care about being hated anymore. So they're kind of like, oh, well, I really like that. So I think that's cool. But now it's kind of gone the other way. Like it feels like people they're still scared to be made fun of. So you can kind of see them going, oh, I'm singing my heart out here, but I'm kind of doing it in a funny way. Like I'm pretending that I'm making fun of it, but I really actually do like the song. So that's not, I'm not trying to act like I'm the owner of Creed, because people love to say I feel like I talk like I own Auburn. No, I just have a lot in Auburn. I grew up here, went there, have had a website about it for 15 years, been to 185 straight home games, whatever. I'm not saying I own Auburn. I'm not saying I own Creed. But I'm just not liking this vibe. I'm glad people are liking Creed, but I still kind of feel like there's a twinge of I'm scared to really commit to liking Creed, so I'm just going to like oversing this song to pretend. So if you say I'm a loser, I'm like, dude, I'm just kidding. I don't really like this. This is cheesy. I don't know. I've seen a lot on TikTok and a lot on Instagram. And all out of that, all the reels or whatever, YouTube shorts, and you see all these people, all these, even, you know, 30-year-old housewives sitting at home, like making videos of them overly demonstratively singing, Hold Me Now, I'm 6 feet from the edge. If you're going to like Creed. I don't care. Like I said, I wore a Creed shirt. I mean, it was class. It was a navy blue shirt that said Creed across the top, and it had like a silhouette of maybe Scott Stapp singing in light blue. I don't know. It was whatever. Own it. Don't be one of those dudes, bros, that is scared to be made fun of. So you gotta, like, I'm gonna listen to him, but you know, yeah, I don't really like, you know, what's that scene in Tommy Boy? It just popped in my head. In Tommy Boy, where they're listening, I can't think of the song. They're driving down the road and they're listening. It's a soft song. I can't remember. I can't hear it right now. But they're like, oh, wow, talk about lame. And the other guy said, well, yeah, totally. And he said, well, I can take it if you can. Yeah, whatever. And then it skips ahead and they're like blaring the words. They're singing like crazy. That's exactly what it is. It's like everybody likes the song. I get it. I get the cheese of Creed. I get a little bit of it. But you like the songs. Own it. Don't fake it. Don't overdo it just so that if somebody claims you like them, you can say, oh, no, I was just kidding. Own it. Higher has been played 9 quadrillion times. I'm going to defend Creed here for a second. People started hating Creed because they played Higher on the radio 7 billion times. Is that Creed's fault that it's a good song? And it was like overplayed like crazy or with arms wide open? It's not their fault. Like, it's played that way because it's played that much because it's a good song. It's a cool radio rock song. It's a anthem rock, something you'd hear in a huge stadium. And guess what? The Texas Rangers used it as their anthem a few years ago, and that was kind of part of the resurgence of Creed. But again, just embrace it. Don't do the whole, hey, I'm kind of making fun of myself, and if you say I like it, I'm just going to then turn it around and say, no, I was just kidding. I'm just making fun of it. You like the song. Chill out. All right, that's all I got to say. I could go over Creed history forever, but Mark Tremonti, guitarist, awesome, like one of the best metal thrashing guitarists there is. Of course, people that listen to hard thrashing metal are going to say he's not good because, you know, the bands you've never heard of are obviously the best bands. Oh, let's equate that to football. the quarterback that you've never seen taking a snap, he's better than the starter all the time, right? Same thing with bands. That band that I listen to that nobody's heard of and nobody will play, yeah, they're way better. Isn't it funny how humans work? All right. Anyway, so if you enjoyed the Creed 10 minutes, I may do something later. There's other bands. I got on a Beastie Boys kick. I went to the gym this morning, just ran on the treadmill, walked on the treadmill, and I watched Beastie Boys videos on TikTok the whole time. Beastie Boys, they're one of those bands that I don't forget about, but I just don't listen to them for like a year, and then I'll get into them for like a month, and they are geniuses. They were geniuses. Rap, rock, all together. I'll talk about them in another one. If you have any ideas of things to talk about, I love to talk about rap. Love to talk about rock. Love to talk about ghosts. I don't think ghosts are necessarily spirits most of the time. Anyway, that's enough about not Auburn. I know some of you turned it off, and that's fine. I already got your listen. So we will. That's number 2 of 52 that I will do for the rest of the year. Again, stay on top of me. If I don't do one next week, cuss me out, and I'll do 2 the next. So that is it. This has been episode 18 of the Warboggle podcast. Peace.